For the next 30 minutes, welcome to Old Testament Prophets with your host, Father Mitch Pacwa. In a moment, Father Pacwa.
God be with you. My name is Father Mitchell Pacwa. I'm a Jesuit priest and a professor of Old Testament at Loyola University of Chicago. And we're in the midst of a series on the prophets. In our last episode, we looked at Elijah the Tishbite, Elijah the man from Tishbe, who had stopped rain and dew in all the land of Israel and Phoenicia, that is, the land of Baal. And he did this because he was fighting against the god Baal, the god of the Phoenicians, who had been brought over to Israelite worship by Queen Jezebel, the wife of Ahab, the king. Now, Elijah brought about rain at the end of a long drought. But then there was trouble, because Jezebel was told by Ahab that Elijah killed all of Jezebel's prophets of Baal and Asherah. And so, Jezebel sent a messenger to Elijah. This is found in 1 Kings chapter 19. And she said to him, "If you are Elijah, I am Jezebel." Now, what does that mean? Well, keep in mind what the names of these two people mean. Elijah means, "My God is Yahweh." That's what Elijah means. Whereas Jezebel means, "Where is Zabul Baal? Where is the prince Baal?" Okay, that's what her name means. Where is Prince Baal? And "where is Prince Baal" was a phrase used by the Canaanite peoples whenever they expected Baal to be resurrected from the dead. Every spring, they expected Baal to be resurrected from the dead because they believed he was killed by the god of the sea and by the god of death in the autumn, and all the trees of the forest would die. And then in the springtime, Baal would be resurrected by his sister, who also happened to be his wife. This was a family where incest was pretty common among the gods. And so, we see that when Jezebel was named, her father or mother had expected Baal to be resurrected. So they named the little girl, "Where is Zebul? Where is Prince Baal?" That is, Jezebel. And so Jezebel is saying to Elijah, "Okay, if you are Elijah," that is, "if your essence is to be, 'My God is Yahweh,'" then Jezebel is saying, "My essence is to be, 'Where is my Prince Baal?' And if I don't kill you, may God kill me." I mean, actually, she says, "May the gods kill me." Well, old Elijah is very upset and worried and nervous about his life. Now, he trusts the Lord, as we've seen in other times, but at this time, he runs away and he goes far south. He goes to Be'er Sheba. Now, Be'er Sheba is down in the south of Judah. It's the farthest southern city among the Israelite peoples or Judahite peoples. And he leaves his servant there, and then he goes on a longer journey. Now, as it says here, he went one day of a journey, and then he sat down underneath a broom tree. This was a tree that has a very nice white flower with a maroon center, and it usually grows in gullies, what they call over there a wadi. And he sits down there and he says, "Lord, let me die." He prays for death. Now notice this. He does not commit suicide, because he knows that life is a gift from God, and he may not take his own life. Yahweh may take it, but he may not. So he wants to die because he is discouraged, upset, perhaps close to despair. He's running away. His life is in danger. Everything is going terribly, even though he's been a very faithful prophet. And so he asks for death. Now, a lot of times we can relate to poor Elijah here, huh? Because Elijah did well. He was successful as a prophet. And perhaps some of us are very successful in our ministry. As a matter of fact, that happened to Jesus. He was very successful in his ministry. Healing, curing, multiplying food, preaching, having crowds listen. And so was Elijah successful as a prophet. And maybe we're successful. That does not mean, though, that we will have to omit suffering or that we'll be able to skirt around it. Elijah, though he was successful as a prophet, still had to suffer much. So much, he was ready to die. And so, at that point, an angel of the Lord brings him some food. And the angel of the Lord gives him a jar of water and some bread, sort of like a pita bread, you know, round bread that was baked on stones. And he says, take and eat. And so Elijah eats. Because the answer to his prayer is no, you are not to die. I want you to live. Then the angel comes back again with more water and more bread. And he eats again. Because God's answer is no, you are not going to die. Then a third time the angel gives him food and water. And then he says, take this because you have a long journey to go on. And so he does. He listens to God and he accepts God's command to live. And he goes on the journey to Mount Horeb. Now, when he came to Mount Horeb, he went to a cave. Now, Mount Horeb means the desert mountain. Okay? That's what Horeb means, to be a desert or dry. And it's the North Israelite dialect name for Mount Sinai. See, in Judah, they called it Sinai. In Jerusalem, they called it Mount Sinai. But up in the north of the country, they called it Mount Horeb. So it's the same place as Sinai. And so Elijah goes back to that old-time religion. If it was good enough for Moses, it's good enough for me. He goes back to where the Lord met Moses on Mount Horeb, Mount Sinai. And he goes into a cave there. And remember, back in Exodus chapter 33, Moses had been taken into a cleft in the rock, a little cave in the rock. And he was hidden there when the Lord was to pass by him, because the Lord would pass by Moses, and Moses was put into this little cave by the Lord, and when the Lord passed by, Moses would be able to see the Lord's back. Well, Elijah goes back to that same place so he can see the Lord. And remember what we've said from the beginning of the series, to be a true prophet means that you see the Lord. And so, first of all, there's a storm. And the Lord is not in the storm. Then there's an earthquake, and the Lord's not in the earthquake. And then there's fire, and the Lord is not in the fire. And these are the kind of things that we see mentioned in Psalm 18. If you open up your Bibles to Psalm 18, and look at verse 7, where it says, when the earth quaked and quivered, the foundations of the mountain rocked and trembled. They quivered because Yahweh was angry. And from his nostrils a smoke ascended. From his mouth a fire consumed. He bent down to heaven, and a dark cloud under his feet. All these things, dark cloud of storm, thunder and lightning, and all kinds of fire, and earthquake. All of this is found in Psalm 18 as the presence of God. But as it says here in 1 Kings 18, Elijah did not find the Lord in all of these things. Now we're going to come back in just a minute. And stay with us as we go on to see how Elijah did experience the Lord. So be with us. Thank you. Elijah went up to Mount Horeb, that is Mount Sinai. And while he was there, he expected to meet the Lord. And he did not meet the Lord in fire and earthquake. He didn't meet him in a storm and a strong wind. And instead, he meets him in a still, small voice. as we see in 1 Kings chapter 19. In verse 12 it says that he was met the Lord Yahweh in a still small voice. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean that Yahweh always is gentle, because we're going to see how Yahweh is also going to speak some very tough words to Elijah. But what it means is that Yahweh doesn't necessarily show up in all kinds of fireworks. He doesn't show up in all sorts of great signs in the sky. And as a matter of fact, Jesus said the same thing to the Pharisees. When they asked for a sign in the sky, he didn't give it to them. Well, neither did Elijah see God in that. He saw him in a still small voice that spoke to him. He spoke to him, and then Elijah made his complaint. Okay, God, let's talk about this. The complaint was this. Yahweh says, what are you doing here, Elijah? I thought you were back in the old country, back in Israel. And he said, I am filled with jealous zeal. I am put on fire for you, Yahweh. I have this zeal, this power for you, because the sons of Israel have deserted you, broken down your altars, and put your prophets to the sword. I'm the only one left, and they're trying to kill me. So he feels so alone. And how many times when we serve the Lord, we might not just feel exactly the same way, so alone, like Elijah. And so Yahweh says to him, go back. Go back by the same way to the wilderness of Damascus. Now, the wilderness of Damascus is a territory just northeast of the Sea of Galilee. And it was a place of refuge because it's a desert, a lot of lava there from volcanoes, and it's a place to hide. And you are to go and to anoint Hazael as the king of Aram, that is, as the king of the Arameans in Damascus. You are to anoint Jehu, the son of Nimshi, as the king of Israel. And you are to anoint Elisha, the son of Shaphat, of Abel-Mehola, as prophet to succeed you. So, here we see a triple commission. Elijah is to go to this district northwest of the Sea of Galilee and to anoint a king of Damascus, a foreign king, because Yahweh is in control of these foreign kings, a new king of Israel and a new dynasty, the dynasty of Jehu, and also a prophet. And it's interesting. This is the only time we see anybody in the whole Bible is told to anoint a prophet. Kings are anointed with oil, but now a prophet is anointed with oil. And when we were baptized, even as infants, we were anointed with oil. And the priest even said, you are anointed with oil as a king, as a priest, and as a prophet. Just like in the Old Testament. It's because Jesus is the king, the priest, and the prophet, and we are anointed into him. And we are to be prophets like him. So also do we see here, the one time of the anointing of a prophet in the Old Testament. And so, he also goes on to tell him that there will be warfare from this Hazael, who's the king of Damascus. And if anybody survives him, Jehu will put them to death. So what we see here is that Elijah understands that God's will be fulfilled in warfare, even from foreign enemies. Even when the enemies attack, that they will be part of God's plan. Now, one of the things with this is that later on, the prophets will also understand other foreign enemies as the instruments of God, the Assyrians and the Babylonians. But it seems that the prophets go back to Elijah here in understanding that the people of Damascus are God's instrument to punish Israel for its sins. And that is going to take place for the later prophets as well as part of their message. Then after this, Elijah leaves Mount Horeb, way down in the Sinai Peninsula, and he comes back up to Israel. And as we see, he anoints Elisha, the son of Shaphat, as he was plowing. He comes upon him. Elisha is just minding his own business, plowing his fields. He's got a whole bunch of servants there. And all of a sudden, Elijah comes along with a cloak, takes the cloak, and throws it over the head of Elisha. And Elisha left his oxen and ran after Elijah, because as soon as Elijah did that, Elijah ran away. And so Elisha runs after him. He says, what did you do? Elisha says, let me go back and kiss my father and my mother goodbye. And Elijah says, what did I do? Have I done anything to you? You sure have. He made Elisha a prophet. Because Elijah took his own mantle, his own cloak, which had touched his body and became imbued with his own spirit. And he put it over Elisha to give him some of that spirit. Something we'll see come to pass later on in the second book of Kings. And then Elisha took and he killed his oxen, and he used his plow to cook the oxen, and he then left his family in his hometown. And that symbolizes the same thing that the apostles did when they left their nets. Because what happens is that Elisha destroys his old way of life. He takes and kills his oxen that he worked with, that he earned his keep with. He destroys his plows, and he starts a new way of life as a prophet. And this brings out an important point. Jesus, when he called his apostles, asked them to leave their nets and their old way of life in order to follow him. And a lot of us are also going to be called to do the same thing. That the Lord will call us to follow him and be his prophets, to be his spokespersons. And that might mean for many of us burning our ox and burning our old plows and leaving our nets, that is, leaving our old way of life, our old way of earning our keep, and instead following the Lord and trusting in him to do what he wants for us. Well, then, all of a sudden, the scene stops, and we go to a number of different scenes. And we see here how we go to the story of Ahab, the king of Israel. First episode takes place in chapter 20. Here, the king of Aram, Ben-Hadad. Now, this is not the one that Elijah was told to anoint. That one is coming after Ben-Hadad dies. But Ben-Hadad says to the king of Israel, Ahab, look, I want your wife, I want your money, I want your house, and I want your kids, and I want your stuff. And the king of Israel says, you're crazy. Gans mishuga, totally nuts. And so they go to war. And we see a prophet tells King Ahab in chapter 20, verse 13, Yahweh says this, you've seen this mighty army of the Arameans? This very day I will deliver it into your hands, and you shall know that I'm Yahweh. And so Yahweh delivers the army into the hands of Ahab. And then later on, for the next year, a prophet prophesies in verse 22 that at the turn of the year, that is, at the new year, this army is also going to show up, and you're going to have to fight against them, but you're going to win. And then the king of Aram says, look, the reason that Yahweh beat us before is because Yahweh is the God of the mountains, not a God of the valleys. Let's go fight Israel in the valleys, and we'll beat them. And so then what happens is that they fight against Israel in the valleys, and they lose there too because Yahweh was mad and spoke through a prophet. Look, I am not just a God of the mountains, I'm a God everywhere. And so he defeats the Arameans. But Ahab was supposed to kill this king of Aram, King Ben-Hadad. And Ahab doesn't. And therefore, a prophet says, because you did not obey me, and you did not kill this king Ben-Hadad, you will die. Now we're going to see in just a moment how Ahab continues to pursue death, how he seeks death by his disobedience. Stay tuned with us, and we'll be back in a minute. Taking a look at the life of Elijah, we're also seeing how it's intertwined with Ahab. Ahab, the king of the northern kingdom of Israel, a king who is pursuing death by his disobedience of God's law. And if you open up to 1 Kings chapter 21, we'll take a look at the story of the vineyard of Naboth. Now, Naboth was a man from Jezreel, a town up in the north. And he had a vineyard close by the palace of Ahab in Samaria. And Ahab said to Naboth, give me your vineyard to be my vegetable garden, since it adjoins my house, and I will give you a better vineyard for it. But Naboth answered Ahab, Yahweh forbid that I should give you the inheritance of my ancestors, Now, what's the big deal? We always buy and sell land, no big deal, right? Except this. After Joshua had begun the conquest of the land of Canaan, he divided up the land according to the 12 tribes and each clan and each family of the tribes. And the idea was this. Yahweh was the real owner of the land. We don't own this land. We don't take any of it with us. As a matter of fact, it takes us when we die. We get buried in the land. We don't take any of it with us. And because Yahweh is the one that owns the land, not us, we are simply stewards of God's gift, stewards of God's land. And Yahweh apportioned his land of Israel to each tribe and each family and each clan, and that was meant to be, according to Joshua, an everlasting inheritance. For all generations, they were supposed to keep that land in the family. And if somebody in the family got so poor that he had to sell it, he was under moral obligation to sell it to somebody else in the family. And as a matter of fact, the family member who bought it was called the Goel, which means the redeemer of the land, because they redeemed it and kept it in the way Yahweh had meant it. And you were not to sell it to other people so they could make big profits off of it. And so Naboth is very faithful, and he won't sell. Well, Ahab went home gloomy and out of temper. That is, he went home and he pouted. He was such a spoiled brat. And he went to his wife Jezebel, and Jezebel said, "What's wrong with you? What kind of a king are you? You're supposed to be in charge of this country. If you want something, take it." Now that was the way her family ran the kingdom. And so Jezebel just took things into her own hands. She was not only nagging her husband Ahab, but she also went ahead and did her own thing. That is, she wrote letters and said, "Proclaim a fast and put Naboth on trial. And get some false witnesses to say that he did something wrong, and then stone him to death." And so that happens. And Ahab then goes ahead and takes the vineyard of Naboth, acting as if he didn't know anything bad happened. If you don't ask questions, you won't find out any problems. That is not the role of a king of Israel. A king of Israel was to be just and to seek what was just, not to seek what was false and lie, not to steal. He was to be a just judge. And Ahab did not do that. And so, because of that, Elijah comes over and pronounces sentence against him. The Lord Yahweh came to Elijah and said, "Go meet King Ahab, the king of Israel in Samaria. You will find him in Naboth's vineyard, the vineyard he stole, in effect, from Naboth through murder." Yahweh says this, "You have committed murder, and now you steal as well. For this," and Yahweh says this, not just Elijah, Yahweh says this, "in the place where the dogs licked the blood of Naboth, the dogs will lick your blood too." Now this was a disgrace to have an unclean animal like dogs, because they were considered unkosher animals, to lick your blood instead of having it buried in a proper tomb. And he says, "I will also bring disaster on you. I will sweep away your descendants, wipe out your family, and Jezebel's going to have her blood drunk up by the little puppy doggies too." She thinks she's so good looking. Well, wait till the doggies get a hold of her. Well, Ahab hears it and he repents. And because he repents of his sin, Elijah the Tishbite says, "Well, since Ahab has humbled himself, this disaster will come down in the days of his son." Well, in chapter 22, we see that this all takes place. Because Ahab goes up and he fights again against the people of Aram, that is Syria, and fights against Ben-Hadad. And he gets his prophets to come and tell him whether or not he's going to win. Now, the prophets tell him, and these are his own prophets, they say, "Look, Ahab, go ahead, you're going to win. You're going to be a big victor in battle." And all this good stuff. But at the same time, King Jehoshaphat is the king of the southern kingdom, Judah. And he tells Ahab, "Well, these are all the prophets you got up here?" And Ahab says, "Look, Jehoshaphat, these prophets like me, but there's one bum And he's a shlemiel as far as I'm concerned. And I'm the shlemazel that has to listen to his bad stuff. Shlemazel means that somebody who has the bad luck to meet up with a bad person that's a shlemiel. And I'm the shlemazel that's got to listen to this Micaiah, the son of Imlah. That is Micaiah ben Imlah. And this guy always says bad stuff about me. And Jehoshaphat said, well, call him anyway. Let's listen to him. So, Micaiah, the prophet, comes and says, go ahead, Ahab. Go ahead. Fight against him. You're going to win. And Ahab says, look, you prophet Micaiah, how many times do I got to tell you to tell the truth? And so Micaiah ben Imlah says in chapter 22, verse 17, I have seen all Israel scattered on the mountains like sheep without a shepherd. And Yahweh said, these have no master, let each go home unmolested. And Ahab says to Jehoshaphat, see, what did I tell you? He always says bad stuff. And so Micaiah ben Imlah is put in prison, and he says, if I am a true prophet, my words will come true. They go off into battle. Ahab puts on a disguise, and while he's disguised, he goes off into battle. But what happens is that an Aramean soldier shoots at him, and the arrow goes right through his armor, and he dies. And then he's taken in his chariot to have his chariot washed off, and sure enough, the water that washes off the blood of Ahab gets licked up by the dog.